When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
Black Friday at BJ's Wholesale Club is so big, we called in the expert at paying less around the holidays.
Scrooge here. Past, present, or future, it's hard to beat the Black Friday deals at BJ's. Believe me, I've tried. Get 25% off select toys, 30% off select small appliances, and 45% off select TVs through December 1st. Plus, doorbuster deals Thanksgiving weekend. These prices are so good they even rattled out Marley's Jane. Bah, humbug. Sorry, old habit.
Visit BJ's.com/Black Friday for holiday savings.
All right. So, Matt, my favorite Robin Williams film, without doubt, is Mrs. Fire.
It took me a minute. God.
It's good.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the graveyard. Thank you for joining us tonight. My name is Adam.
And my name's Matt.
Now, pull up a tombstone or settle into your casket and get comfortable, because this is Graveyard Tales. All right, everybody, here we are again. Matt, how you doing tonight, brother?
I'm not doing too bad. You know, it's been kind of a weird week already. We're on a different night.
Yep.
Which doesn't matter to you guys, but it kind of throws us off.
Yeah, matters a lot to us.
I mean, it is. It's like doing something for years on the same day, and then just out of the blue having to do it on a different day. I mean, you're kind of like, this is weird. So
screws everything up.
I've been thinking tomorrow's Thursday.
Yeah, right. Well, and then your body is also like, hey, you got another day. Mm-hmm. This is the day that I normally feel like crap. And then I feel better on Wednesdays.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we're recording on the day I feel like crap. So that's fantastic.
See, Adam is so scheduled out. He even has a day to feel bad.
Yeah, right.
You know, I can't be feeling bad. It's Thursday. I feel bad on Tuesday.
Yeah, I got my stuff on lock, man. But before we get too off track, I want to say first, you've got a couple weeks left to send in your listener stories for this year's Christmas and maybe even New Year's if you get a lot of stories in for the listener stories episode. So if you have not sent yours in, email it to us. Put on the subject line listener stories and we will save it. And once that deadline hits, with anything sent after our deadline is going next year.
Right.
So because we got to get it scheduled out. We've got to write all the stories out into our script. And then we've got to record it and get it ready to go, because it's coming out on usually a time that we're hanging out with family and stuff like that. So we record them earlier so that you guys can have your listener stories and sitting around the fire at Christmas listening to these ghost stories. So if you haven't sent them in, please do that now. It's almost here. It's almost here. And we would love to read your stories.
Yeah. And you guys have blown us out of the water, not just with the amount of stories, with how good some of these stories really are.
Yep.
And we just get super excited because, man, we have had some crazy stories come in from you guys. Mm-hmm. We love it.
Yeah. I mean, that's the reason, one of the reasons that we started this podcast is to hear stories like this. We love stories of the paranormal and the weird, and you guys have, I mean, kept us going with that for years now, and this has become an annual tradition. So please join in, send us your listener stories. Also, after you type out your listener story and send it to us, go over to patreon.com/graveyardtales if you have not already and sign up to become a patron. We've got multiple different levels. You can get bonus episodes. You can get ad-free versions of the main episodes on there. And our $10 patrons, they get all of that. Plus, they get our second show.
Mm-hmm.
It is an amazing deal. And our second show, Side Quest, is it's a fun reprieve from...
That's a good way to say it.
Graveyard Tales research and stuff for us. If we do any research, it's just enough research to make the other one laugh or freak the other one out.
Right, exactly. It's
a bunch of random fun stuff that you wouldn't get on Graveyard Tales. So if you're interested in that, patreon.com/graveyardtales, sign up, become a patron, and get all that. Promise you're going to love it. We got a buttload of episodes in our back catalog. We've been doing it for years.
Mm-hmm.
So you have access to all of that, videos and audio and everything, and it'll go to your podcatcher. Wherever you listen to us, if you sign up for Patreon thing, it goes into our podcast stream. So you can listen to
it the same way.
Exactly. So you don't have to go to the website. You have to go to the website once to sign up, but then after that, it goes to whatever podcatcher you're using. So, Matt, I think that's all I've got for the housekeeping today.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell us, what are we talking about tonight, brother?
Okay. So tonight, I don't know. I don't know if this is really a cryptid, a spirit. It's something.
It's another one of those.
It's kind of in the middle. We are going to go south of the border, and we are going to talk about the Alush from Mayan folklore or Mayan history, if you will. I mean, you know, it's really hard to say, but we've mentioned this once before, but I don't think we talked about it on Graveyard Tales. I think it was in a bonus show.
Yep, it was a Patreon.
And we're going to talk about that story, too, that... somebody that's fairly famous had an experience that they believed was with an Alush.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is kind of an interesting thing. As we did this research, I learned quite a bit, but it really makes you kind of question, maybe there is something to this.
Right.
You know, this isn't just a boogeyman kind of story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is some deep seated belief here. So
yep,
I think y'all will enjoy it.
Yep. And as we always say, go check our sources down in the bottom of the show notes. You can find where we found all the information. We try to source and reference everything that we talk about. So you can find all of that in the bottom of our show notes. Now, the Alush, like Matt was alluding to, is a mythical spirit in Mayan folklore. And mythical, let's put in quotes for now, because we're not 100% on, is it mythical? Is it legit? And it primarily comes from the Yucatan Peninsula. And it's believed to be a small elf-like guardian of nature. And it can bring fortune or misfortune, depending on the respect and the offerings that humans give to it. So these spirits are most commonly associated with the Mayan people, and they continue to honor them to this day through rituals, offerings, and even the construction of small shrines, which we'll talk about in a minute. And typically, they're invisible to humans, which we'll get into. But, you know, they can become visible. You can see them, which plays into a lot of the stories that Matt has. And they're typically found in natural areas like jungles, forest, fields. So if you've got a farmer plowing a field and stuff, he could run into an Alush. Caves. And, you know, even as you go down into the cave, they're known to live down there.
Mm-hmm.
But they're able to make a home anywhere they wish, as long as they have food, water, and shelter. So yeah. That sounds like a living being to me.
Mm-hmm.
So first, we need to look at the Mayan people. Obviously, this isn't going to be a detailed look at their history. It's just a quick overview to kind of get a idea of what they believe. And we've done this before on another episode, but I can't remember what it was, Matt. But we talked about the Mayans once before.
Mm-hmm.
The Mayan people are an indigenous civilization of Mesoamerica, and they're known for their complex cities, writing, astronomy, and a vibrant spiritual world that's still alive in the descendants of the Maya that's across Mexico, Guatemala, Belize, Honduras, and El Salvador. Now, the earliest Maya settlements began around 1500 BCE as village agriculturalists in southeastern Mexico and Central America. But by about 250 CE, the Maya entered what we know as the Classic Period. So they established the powerful city-states like Tikal, Copan, Palenque, Calakmul, and they all had these monumental architectures, sophisticated writing. It was the hieroglyphic writing that we're still, we've got a good handle on a lot of the classic mm-hmm. period hieroglyphs, but the pre-classic and stuff, we don't know much about. And they also had what we believe to be a advanced knowledge in astronomy and mathematics. Now, around 900 CE, the classic cities largely declined because of war and environmental stress, drought, and shifting trade routes. And the civilization continued in places like Chichen Itza and Mayapan in the Yucatan Peninsula. So the Spanish conquest, though, in the 16th century, basically ended Maya independence.
Right.
The Spanish came over and kind of destroyed the Maya cities and all that stuff. But the Mayan identity and tradition still persist in millions of descendants throughout South America.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, the European explorers were really good at just devastating these civilizations. I mean,
dude,
if they were good at anything, it was that.
Yeah. You know? Well, we've talked about this before. And one of the things that bothers me so much is when the Spanish came over and destroyed, you know, took over the Maya, they destroyed their writings and right. everything. How much further along could we be in our knowledge of astronomy, mathematics, if that hadn't been destroyed? Because we'd have the basis there. We wouldn't have to relearn that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It would be there and we could expand on it. And stuff like the Alush. Maybe there was writings on the Alush that was destroyed that could have proven its existence.
And, I'm one of these guys that always says, you know, the universe does things that we don't understand. And, you know, we have found entire cities that the jungle just took back.
Right, right.
And I always like to think that, you know, the jungle was protecting what was part of the Mayans and the Aztecs and so forth for the future.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was like, we're not going to let you destroy all of this. You know,
right.
So
right.
we're going to take some of it back so that you may never find it,
mm-hmm.
but somebody's going to find some of it at some point. I know that's kind of a woo-woo theory, but I like it, because Adam's right. So much was destroyed, you know, either through, you know, exploration, through war, you know, these battling tribes and whatnot. That was part of their thing, is they would destroy everything. They would wipe that civilization off of the earth.
Right.
And there's so many ancient wonders across the planet that we might understand better had that not occurred. Mm-hmm. You know, had we could have learned, how did they know how to build this pyramid that looks like the one halfway around the world?
Yeah, right.
You know,
right.
How did they know how to orient this? Where did they get this information? We don't know that. I mean, there's tons of theories, but all of that information was most likely destroyed.
Yep, right. Now, the Mayan religion was polytheistic, and it centered on a vast pantheon of gods that connected all of the elements of nature, like the sun, moon, rain, crops and maize and fire and animals, and every object, every animal, every place, that everything was viewed as possessing a sacred life force.
Mm-hmm.
And Matt and I have discussed, because I really want to do an episode on that, where everything has a consciousness. So your sofa has a consciousness, and your car has a consciousness. If you talk trash about your car and you hate your car, it's going to break down on you.
Right.
But if you talk good to it, it's going to live forever, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the Maya believed in something very similar. Now the principal creator god, was Ajal, and I apologize. I know I'm not pronouncing this correctly, but I don't speak ancient Mayan, so forgive me. This god was seen as the all-encompassing source of the cosmos. So it combined both masculine and feminine traits, and it was responsible for the universe's formation. Now, knowing a lot of that, let's get into the Elush. Now, what does the Elush look like? Well, the Elush are typically described as being about knee high, so around 2 to 3 feet tall, kind of miniature humans that are dressed in traditional Mayan garb. And their features echo those of the ancient Maya people. They often have notable details like wide owl eyes, and reports mention a lot of times that they have animal-like features. So a lot of them will include, you know, different elements of like the iguanas, deer, macaws. And then they say this possibly symbolizes the connection to the jungle and the creatures within it, because it's supposed to be a protector spirit. Now, in some stories, they're described as quick and elusive, so they're capable of appearing and disappearing at will. And the Elush is usually invisible to humans, like I said, but it can take on a visible form for specific reasons. Like if it wants to communicate with or scare a human, then it will become visible. If it wants to interact in any way with the humans, it pretty much has to become visible, and it can do that. Now, when they choose to be seen, some have been depicted as child-sized or as like shadows kind of in the corners of your eye, and they've got glowing red eyes. When they're trying to scare you, they'll appear as a shadow with glowing red eyes. Now, the Elush are both mischievous and helpful. They can be capable of granting blessings to you, your family, your crops, or curses, depending on how you treat them. Mm-hmm. But they can also be summoned, and they can be appeased through offerings. And their presence is tied to natural places, like I was mentioning earlier, caves, fields, forests, all that stuff. A lot of times, they're seen around cenotes. They're in Southern America, and if you don't know, that's like a sinkhole that is filled with water, usually connected to other sinkholes filled with water. A lot of scientists believe that happened when the meteor that killed the dinosaurs struck, It created all these holes that connected to underground water. And the Alush are tied to those cenotes. Their default setting, basically, is invisible. So they move through the world unseen, but they're always watching you. Now, their ability to change form and interact with nature makes them comparable to sprites and brownies and leprechauns and stuff that we've talked about before. All right, Matt, so let's take a second and talk about one of tonight's sponsors, MeUndies. Now, if you haven't started buying people gifts off of your gift list yet, you still have got plenty of time to get everyone on your list some MeUndies. And whether it's matching underwear with your partner, if you want to coordinate PJs for the family photo, or, you know, you just want to get festive with a friend group and say, hey, let's all get holiday underwear, that would be fun. MeUndies makes it fun, easy, and ridiculously cozy. Their holiday prints are great. I mean, if you love festive underwear, MeUndies is a place to get them because their fabric is next level soft. And the best part is you'll actually want to get caught in matching loungewear all season long. And dude, I love the softness of the MeUndies. And we've said this before, I wear the boxer brief ball caddies. So this is not the time of year when you got to worry about bat winging or anything, but get them now and you won't bat wing in the summer. And they are so soft. And Ashley and I have matching sets. Michael has a couple that match us too, but it's just funny. We now every day we'll go, which one you wearing? Which one you wearing? And we'll see if we happen to accidentally match. It's fun.
MeUndies is the go-to for unbelievably soft underwear and loungewear made from ultra modal. Now that's fancy speak for cloud level comfort.
True.
And as Adam said, with matching sets and fun festive prints, you'll be the most coordinated couple or family on the couch. And I promise everyone will look forward to getting your Christmas card.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking over 30 million pairs sold, 90,000 five-star reviews, and a problem-free philosophy that means if you don't love your first pair, it's on them.
That's amazing.
From cozy joggers to festive onesies, cheeky undies to cuddle-worthy bralettes, there is a cut, color, and vibe for everyone on your holiday list. Their Match Me line lets couples and friends. I'm not going to match with Adam, but I do.
Oh, come on, man.
You just know we already do. Coordinate their loungewear game while the holiday collection brings that seasonal joy to your softest layers. So knock out all your holiday gifting needs today with MeUndies to get exclusive holiday deals up to 50% off. That's right, 50% off.
It's great.
Go to MeUndies.com/graveyard and enter our promo code GRAVEYARD. That's GRAVEYARD.
That's right, MeUndies.com/graveyard and use our promo code GRAVEYARD, GRAVEYARD, for up to 50% off. So they're kind of like Mayan Fae is how I like to think of them. They're, you know, we talked about the Fae being protectors of nature. And if you get out in nature, you might run into a fairy circle or something like that. It's kind of the same in Maya folklore, but they call them the Alush. So in doing this research, I kind of have thought, are they just a branch of the same thing? Because
I've thought that too.
Yeah. So you've got these nature spirits throughout the world. And depending on your location, you call them something different. But they perform the same tasks, which then makes you think, okay, if every culture has something like this, are they just all making up the same thing? Or are there actually nature spirits out there that are there to protect the natural places? Now, the Maya always warn against carelessly speaking the name of an Aleutian because that can invite their attention. And when you invite their attention, you might get some mischievous activity from them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they have a guardianship role that is central to the legend of the Aleutian. They protect crops. They bring rain. They scare off thieves when you respect them and treat them well. But they can also play tricks on you and cause you misfortune if you make them mad.
Yeah. This reminds me of brownies.
Yep. Yep. 100%.
Yeah. Yeah.
100%.
You be nice to them. They're very helpful. You yep. disrespect them, they cause you a lot of problems. You know, mm-hmm. jack up your house and, you know, right. or they could do the dishes or they could break them all.
Right. Right. And farmers in the Yucatan Peninsula usually will build tiny houses or shrines in their fields to invite the Aleutian in.
Mm-hmm.
Rituals and offerings are performed to establish a good relationship with them. And a lot of times a shaman will come and oversee these rituals to make sure they're done right and that the Aleutian are respected. And they offer items like fruit, seeds, honey, traditional Maya beverages and stuff like that as a way to appease the Aleutian. But at the end of 7 years, Maya custom says that the shrine or house must be sealed to prevent the Aleutian from turning mischievous or malevolent. So you've got a 7-year window with this Aleutian house, then you have to seal it and start all over again, basically. But the Aleutian can be loyal and helpful. But if their 7-year term of guardianship isn't properly concluded by sealing off their house and everything, they might then turn wild and start disrupting your home life, mm-hmm. destroying your fields, stuff like that. And hunters actually will ask for permission from the Aleutian before they take an animal. So if they're out hunting, they will ask the Aleutian permission to hunt this animal because they say failure to do so may result in misfortune or illness.
Yeah.
So if you kill an animal, even if it's to feed you and your family, if you didn't ask for permission, that can lead to bad things for you and your family.
Because they are viewed as guardians.
Right.
You know, and this is another connection to the Fae. Guardians of nature. And if you go into nature, it's there for you, for humans. But you, again, you have to show respect. Mm-hmm. And taking an animal without permission, that would be a very disrespectful thing to do. And, you know, you may eat that animal, your whole family could, and then get really, really sick.
Yep.
You know, because the Aleutian says, we're going to curse this animal that you took without permission.
Right.
Now, there are accounts of Aleutians all over the Yucatan, Belize, Guatemala, and they kind of blend in with the indigenous belief and local storytelling. And then there's a handful or so of contemporary modern day sightings, which has led to additional superstitions that are attributed to the Aleutian.
Right.
Now, according to Mayan legend, these creatures were created by high priests using mud from a cave where no woman had ever stepped foot.
Hmm.
The mud was then molded into the shape of the being, and after 9 nights, it was mixed with honey, flowers, and 9 drops of blood. Now, the magical being had to stay in the shadow for 9 more nights to complete the creation process. This sounds like a golem.
It really does, yeah.
I mean, you know, the building it out of mud and basically breathing life into earth, which is, you know, the process of creating a golem. The difference here, though, is that the golem was always meant to do the master's bidding. You know, these were more like, we're creating guardians, you know.
Yep.
Guardians of the forest, or in this case, the jungle.
Which would still be doing the bidding of the creator.
In some fashion. Well, you'll see as we get into this, you know, these beings, you know, they're autonomous. You know, they don't take orders. Okay. You know, you're not going to tell them, hey, go over there and curse that family. That's not going to be how this works.
Right.
You know, and there's more about how they can't physically harm, but we'll talk more about that. Now, they were meant to be guardians of the jungle, not just protecting nature, but also the treasures that are found there. And there are writings of pirates who sailed that area mention little people that protected the treasure in the jungle. Now, a lot of people believe that this could just be a carryover from British folklore, but some believe that these little people that the pirates talk about were actually the Aleutian.
Right. Well, and you mentioned the forest swallowing back up Maya cities.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things was the Spanish were looking for the city of gold.
Mm-hmm.
And they never found it. And even researchers today are still looking for the city that went high up on a hill to avoid the Spanish, that was supposed to be where they took all the gold.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps the jungle swallowed it up because the Aleutian are protecting that, and we may never find it because the Aleutian have been tasked with protecting.
That's right. I mean, if they're guardians of the jungle, would the jungle not bend to their will?
Right.
You know, and the fact that they have this ability to turn invisible and make themselves visible to humans if they choose. What if they could turn the treasure they're protecting invisible?
Right.
You know, and then that way that the lost city of gold might have been right there.
Mm-hmm.
And the Spanish weren't given permission to see it.
Right.
You know, because the Aleutian says these outsiders are not showing respect to this jungle.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to be rewarded with the treasures that this jungle holds. Now, we've said a lot about jungles. I feel like I've said jungle a dozen times, but
jungle.
According to the locals, that's where they live most often. But as Adam mentioned, they can leave the jungle and move towards civilization if they feel like they will benefit from it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this is true if a community provides them with offerings, in which case they'll go to take advantage of those resources. So you can draw them to you with offerings, but like Adam mentioned, you know, you have to be careful. You know, you don't want to, you know, speak their name aloud and draw them to you negatively, is, you know, that could be bad. So, but this article says that they will only stay as long as the offerings continue. So if you draw them to you, you have to continue to please them or they'll leave. And so, especially if they're involved in some sort of benevolence to your farm or your city or whatever, you want them around.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to piss them off, you know, or just ignore them and have them just leave. Now, when it comes to pleasing the Aleutian, it's fairly easy, but it's also fairly easy to anger them as well. And if they are disrespected or disregarded, they may take on menacing forms to frighten the locals. They also may destroy items in the region or pull, well, love this quote, frustrating jungle pranks. What is a frustrating jungle prank? You know, it's like falling in a hole that's covered with vines. That's a little more than frustrating, you know.
Yep. Right.
Being wrapped up by an anaconda, it's a little more than frustrating.
Yeah. Falling in a cenote,
you get
little
picked
more
up
than
by this huge ass anaconda. And there's a little loose over it, just giggling his butt off. You know, mm-hmm. It's like, ah, I got you.
Frustrating, isn't it?
And some people say that if you have disrespected an Alush or that they have somehow done it, you've got to make it up to them by providing new offerings or even building them a home. And Adam mentioned that, you know, farmers would put a little house, you know, mm-hmm. on their property for the Alush to live and continue to give them offerings. Now, if a Mayan is traveling across the jungle, an Alush may stop him or her and ask for an offering. And if that traveler refuses, the Alush will go get its buddies and cause problems on the rest of that traveler's journey. So
that's not fun.
You meet one and he's like, hey man, you got a buck? And you go, no, little Alush, leave me alone. I don't carry cash. You know, you're just going to use it to buy cigarettes. And right. The Alush says, oh, well, I'll show you. And they go gather up all their friends and then start making problems for you on the rest of your journey. So if you come across one and they ask for something, you better give them something. Adam, you know, I'm one of those guys that believes that you never stop learning. Whether yeah. it's, you know, for schooling, for your personal education, or just the love of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
You need to keep learning. I just love shoving this information into my head. And MasterClass makes it incredibly easy and affordable.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many topics that I'm interested in. You can just pick them. It is incredible what they offer. Last year, I got MasterClass for my mom and dad for Christmas.
Yeah.
My mom, huge Joanna Gaines fan. She loves to follow her lead on interior design and changes up her house based on suggestions. She loves the MasterClass by Joanna Gaines. So it was a perfect gift, and it can be for you guys too.
Yeah, and with MasterClass, you can learn from the best to become your best. And I recently watched the Texas Barbecue MasterClass, and I was telling Matt before we started this, because I was excited about it, I took his tips and tricks on smoking ribs, the best ribs I've ever smoked, hands down, and I learned it from MasterClass. And with plans starting at $10 a month, billed annually, you get unlimited access to over 200 plus classes taught by the world's best business leaders, writers, chefs, and more. And you can turn your commute or workout into a classroom. With audio mode, you can listen to MasterClass lessons anytime, anywhere. And MasterClass fits right into your schedule with thousands of short, easy to digest lessons that you can learn from on your own time. You can learn wherever you are, on your phone, your laptop, or even your TV. MasterClass goes with you. And Matt, that's how I do it. I do it when I'm driving to pick the kid up from school, or while I'm waiting on him to walk out of school or something like that. I've got MasterClass on my phone and I'm learning the whole time. And like you, I love to continually learn. So MasterClass always has great offers during the holidays, sometimes up to as much as 50% off. So just head over to masterclass.com/graveyard, GRAVEYARD, for the current offer.
Yeah, 88% of surveyed members feel that MasterClass has made a positive impact on their lives. So join them for up to 50% off at masterclass.com/graveyard. GRAVEYARD. Masterclass.com/graveyard.
Yeah, give it your candy bar.
Yeah.
It'll be better that they have it than you.
Yeah. But, you know, there was a certain type of, it's down here in my notes and I can't think of it. There's like a brewed, alcoholic beverage, Pozol. It's a corn based drink. They like that. Okay. Honey, you know, flowers, cigarettes. I'm not being facetious there. So those type things, you know, that could be considered a good offering, you know, to that Alush you meet on the path.
Right.
Now, one of the most famous stories of the Alush in Cancun dates back to 1980. Now, I know you thought, dates back to, you didn't expect me to say 1980, did you? You expected me to say like 1500 or something.
Yep, 1780.
1980, when the bridge between Cancun Airport and Kukulcan Avenue was being constructed. I know I mispronounced that, but I'm trying. Each day, the workers found that all the work they had done the day before had been completely destroyed during the night. So
that's a frustrating jungle prank.
Right. And so these guys were desperate. But I mean, you're building a bridge for crying out loud. That's not easy. And you sure can't afford to keep these guys working if they're going to come back the next day and everything they worked on the day before is going to be messed up.
Right. Right.
So they went to a Mayan priest and he educated them on the Alush. The priest advised them to build a temple under the bridge, a small one, so that the Alushes could live there and the workers would be able to finish their work. Guess what? They did it. And it worked. The bridge was completed with no more issues. And the temple, which was kind of one of these like little roadside, oh, look at that, like the world's biggest piece of yarn or something.
Yeah.
It stayed there until 2022.
Wow.
The road was reconfigured, so they had to take the temple out. But, I mean, it was there from 1980 until 2022.
That's longer than 7 years.
Yeah. But it goes to show that this is not some silly ancient legend. These people believe this. I mean, enough for a city planner to go, all right, guys, we got to build this temple to this little spirit or spirits.
And leave it for 40 years.
Yeah. So that we can finish this bridge or we're never going to get it done.
Yep.
And again, the people would go to this temple routinely and leave offerings. You know, corn, flowers, I said earlier, Mayan honey, that Pozol, the corn drink, and fruit were often left at that temple. And so as you went by it, if you visited it or saw it, 9 times out of 10, you were going to see that people had left offerings at this little temple. And you can see there's pictures of it online. I mean, it's not anything super fancy. It doesn't look like the Taj Mahal. It's just a little structure right there, kind of incorporated under the bridge, you know, and that's for the Alush.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
Now, some cryptozoologists believe that the legend of the Alush could have come from reports of real life little Mayan people in the early centuries. So dwarfism would have been an uncommon medical condition in the early past. So the Mayans who witnessed dwarfism may have written these accounts or you know, use the verbal tradition that could have eventually evolved into this legend of the Aleutian. Now, this is more than just a theory. It's supported by accounts that true Aleutians are between 2 to 3 feet tall. And though the figures are made only a few inches tall, true Aleutian reports are much larger and more similar to average dwarfism height.
Hmm.
So, you know, like I said, you know, they may make these little figures that are just like G.I. Joe size. But according to the eyewitness accounts, they're much bigger, you know, so.
Yeah.
There could be something to that. Now, the Aleutian hominids are called proto-pygmies. And the Aleutian are seen, like I said, Yucatan, Mexico, mostly by Mayans, but sometimes Mexicans, and some U.S. tourists have seen them too, fairly often.
Hmm.
People in the Yucatan, though, seem to have the most stories and eyewitness accounts. And in the late 1980s, cryptozoologist Lauren Coleman was able to interview many of these Mayan people who had had firsthand sightings.
Huh.
In his 1985 book, Curious Encounters, he devoted a chapter to the lore, legends, and legacy of the Aleutian. So Coleman relates this particular sighting by a man named Dan Gannon, who was moderator of an online anthropological group. And this sighting occurred on December 7th, 2007. So instead of trying to paraphrase this and muck it all up, the next part of this is I'm going to quote directly from Lauren Coleman's book. Okay.
Cool.
A couple hours after sunset, I was in a vehicle with my wife and a couple of her family members, including one of her brothers who was driving, traveling from Merida, Yucatan to Oxcacab, Yucatan. I know I'm not pronouncing that right. Adam's covering his eyes going, oh my God, he can't see nothing. I was in the front passenger seat. A light rain had just ended, the first rain I'd seen in Yucatan, implying that it may have been the first rain in that part of the Yucatan in at least 2 weeks. As can be observed elsewhere, the first rain after a dry spell tends to correlate with increased animal movement, and I saw a bunch of animals in the vehicle's headlights as we traveled. You can always see a lot of spiders, lizards, and snakes on these rural roads, their eyes reflecting the headlights. Similar to a cat's eyes, something one of my wife Elsa's brothers pointed out to me, and I can attest to. As well as the occasional dog, dogs tend to cluster around towns and villages. But I saw my first raccoon in the Yucatan during that drive. About 2 minutes later, I saw something I wasn't expecting. On the same side of the road on which I saw the raccoon, I saw what looked like a human shoulder and arm and a leg beneath it. It appeared to be a hominid, about 2 feet tall, facing the direction of the vehicle, mostly obscured behind a clump of tall, about 3 foot tall, dried weeds, with only the right side of the body just showing in the headlights. The skin color was medium brown, about the same color as our driver's skin. Not the dark brown skin of many Mayans that work outside in the direct sunlight during the daytime, but lighter. What I saw was not indicative of a thin, scrawny hominid, but rather a very, very muscular one. As the vehicle drew closer and passed the apparent hominid, I could see without a doubt that it moved in a sidestepping motion away from the lights of the vehicle, to more completely hide itself behind the clump of tall weeds. I could also see that the features were very human-like and not hairy at all, just as the typical Mayan has no visible hair, for instance, on their face, arms, and chest, so did this hominid. I have a good idea of how high the shoulder was because I could compare it to the regular posts that appear on the side of the road. The posts are about 1.5 to 2 feet high, and the shoulder was about the same height, possibly a little higher. The apparent hominid definitely wasn't a post. Not only was it positioned wrong, but it looked and behaved wrong to just be a post.
He knew he had to say that because somebody
That's right.
was
you
say,
just
you
saw
throw
the
a
posts
post
on the side of the road. And
you throw a post.
And he goes on and he says, I mean, posts don't visibly move of their own accord and don't look like that.
Right. They don't look like little humans.
He said, as I was the only one intently gazing in the right direction at the right time, said I was constantly and deliberately observing all sorts of plants, animals, stones, whatever. I was, unfortunately, the only one that caught a glimpse of it. After a few seconds of speechless amazement, I blurted out what I had seen. Unfortunately, our driver didn't stop or even slow down. Says Mayans actually tried to avoid the Aleutian. It says possibly for the same reasons that Africans avoid the similar hominid that they call Tokoloshes.
Yeah. The driver went, thanks for telling me. I'm speeding
That's right.
up now.
And the reason they avoid them is fear, including mm-hmm. stories of people who apparently were killed by the Aleutian after encroaching into their territory or caves. I made a point of asking our driver to make a note of exactly where we were when I saw this apparent hominid. Later that night, after we returned to Elsa's parents' house, I told other family members of what I saw. Our driver, who was Elsa's oldest brother, also described exactly where we were. Elsa's father said we were in the middle of a specific forested area where Aleutians are often reported. Said, I'm quite encouraged by all of this. You can bet I'll be bringing trail cameras on my next visit. This was in 2007. Okay. This wasn't even 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, he's telling this story to Lauren Coleman, who is probably the premier cryptozoologist, at least in the U.S. And, you know, these are, and like I said, Dan Gammon was he didn't say he was an anthropologist. It just said he had an online anthropology group. But, you know, if you're the moderator of a group like that, you know, even if this is your hobby, you've got some knowledge.
Right.
I heard Neil deGrasse Tyson the other day talking about, the people that you want to talk to about 3i Atlas are the amateur astronomers, because these are the people that are looking at the sky every night. Mm-hmm. They know what's there and they know what everything looks like. So they know when something's different. This is the same thing. An amateur anthropologist or an anthropology enthusiast, he is going to dig into everything. So he's going to know right. what did he expect to see? And what he saw did not belong. And it was enough that he could identify it as something that didn't belong.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this story I think is great because it's not full of all this extra fluff. You know, it's not, oh, and he did this and he did that, and I was so scared and all this other stuff. It's not. It's just, hey, I saw this thing. I saw yeah. it, and this is where it was, and I know because I was looking that it wasn't a post, and it wasn't an animal that I could tell, you know, and I knew what animals I was looking for. So mm-hmm. this was something completely different, and I saw how it moved, and I saw that it had arms and legs, and it was a humanoid figure. So yeah. that... You know, that alone makes this experience, you know, really valid to me. I'm not saying this guy actually saw an Alush, but he saw something.
That wasn't a post.
That wasn't a post. And it wasn't just a statue or like a little totem or anything that somebody had put there. It moved. And and he knew enough to document all of that, to look for what is it doing. And he even said it moved out of the light, out of the headlights, to kind of cover itself. Like, shoot, they're going to see me. And, you know, I'm going to jump back here in the weeds a little bit. So that's just really, really fascinating to me.
I know. I like that story because there was a lot of detail to it. And there was a lot of the, he knew, being an anthropology guy, what people were going to say. Yep. So he made sure to cover that in the story. And I like how he tied it into the Tokolosh, because it does sound a little bit like the Tokolosh.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe a little more human in appearance, but definitely in behavior.
And more helpful. The Tokolosh didn't seem to be super helpful.
They're not super helpful. Now, in February of 2023, this is a story I alluded to earlier. Mexican President Lopez Obrador posted a photo on social media of a small creature in a tree. In the post, Obrador says the creature resembled a sculpture from an archaeological site on the Yucatan Peninsula. He says, "It appears to be an Alush," the president wrote. "Everything is mystical." Now, he said the photo had been taken 3 days earlier by an engineer on the construction site of a new railway line known as the Tren Maya, which would connect tourist destinations, including the Mayan ancient sites. But a lot of people, when they saw this, they challenged this photo, saying that it had been circulating on social media for at least 2 years. So they didn't think that it was a... They didn't say that it wasn't an Alush. They just said, this is an old photo. Which, you know, we've seen stuff like that before. You get a photo that's rehashed. Maybe this guy, showed the Obrador and said, look at this picture I took, and he really didn't take it, but it's an interesting photo. It doesn't discredit the photo per se, but it may just discredit the story a little bit. But if you look at that photo, whatever that is, is creepy looking. You know, it doesn't look like a friendly little jungle elf. It looks like something you wouldn't want to mess with. But these kind of stories, they blow me away, because I think on the front end, you want to discount these things. You know, if somebody tells you, I've got a house elf. Okay. You watch Harry Potter too much, did you?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But you want to lump this into it. But we're not talking about something that appeared in a book or a children's story and it just kind of folded out into a legend. You know, this, much like in the U.S., you know, the Native American folklore of things like thunderbirds and, you know, skinwalkers and all this, you think, but these people, they wrote these stories and they described these things that they saw to preserve it. They passed down these accounts to preserve it. And we already see what the Mayans wrote down, what they documented to preserve. You know, what if these legends, these oral stories of the Alush are just exactly that, to preserve the stories of these people's experience? And it comes down for centuries. You take that and then add it to the modern beliefs, enough so that a city built a shrine, a little temple to these things. I just feel like there's got to be something to it.
I do too. There's, I don't know. It doesn't have the feel to me of the things that we've talked about that are straight up folklore. Mm-hmm. And we know they're folklore, and the modern sightings, you can't put much credit into. It seems like there is something. Yeah. And the tie-in to the Fae, mm-hmm, makes me think that this is just a Fae that happens to live in the Yucatan Peninsula. And, you know, if you look at a lot of Fae stories, mm-hmm, the Fae, they all have certain characteristics that they all, through all cultures, have, but they also resemble the people of that, yes, area. And I think it's one of two things. It's either the Fae blending in with the people that live in that area, or it's the people of that area seeing the Fae and then, but when we depict it, let's put some of our features onto it to, right, make it seem more,
right,
more believable.
Go ahead.
Oh, I just think it's something we need to take more seriously and not write it off as, oh, this is just ancient Mayan folklore. Right.
And they do get lumped in with leprechauns as well.
Yep.
And
they,
because again,
favor them a little
bit. They do, especially in their behavior. You know, you can, you know, meet a leprechaun and it be very friendly and you offer it something and it, you know, it does something, you know, beneficial to you. You disrespect it, you know, and it does something to, you know, not so nice to you. So, you know, it could be, you know, an aspect of a children's story that says, look, you be nice to nature, you be nice to the little people in the jungle, and they'll be nice to you. You know, this is, you know, just like, you know, you're nice to your brother and you're nice to your sister and they're nice to you back. But it just seems like it's way more than that. And even leprechaun are, you know, lumped in with Fae. So I'm with you, man. I think this is just a Fae story from another part of the world.
Yep.
So I don't know. Tell us what you think. I mean, yep, you know, there's not a whole lot of hard evidence out there, but
there usually isn't with the Fae.
No, and there's not. But when you look at things with such a deep-seated tradition and belief, you kind of think, man, there's got to be something. I mean, go to Appalachia. Talk to those people. Mm-hmm. They will tell you stories, and you can see they believe what they're telling you. That, yep, you know, you don't do this in the jungle at night. If you hear your name, you didn't hear your name. You don't whistle. Right. You know, you don't do things to bring attention to you. Those are deep-seated beliefs because somebody that they knew probably had an experience, probably a lot. It's the same,
right,
here.
Right.
You know, people had an experience with an Alush, and they understand, and they do what they're supposed to do in regards to them. And so I think that is the best evidence of something going on. So... But
yep,
let us know. And the best place to do that is in our Facebook group. If you know some stories about the Alush that we didn't cover tonight, please share them. We'd love to hear them. I don't know how many South American listeners we have. I've never really looked at that, but we might.
I can't remember.
You know, we might have some that you've got your own story. And please, you know, share that. Share it in the Facebook group. Hey, send it to us. for our listener mm-hmm. stories episode. Man, that would be fantastic. But when you get in that Facebook group, you're going to see, we're just thousands of people that want to share and hear some of these incredible stories. Yeah, there's a lot of jokes. Everybody's having fun, but nobody's gonna poke at you or call you a wacko because you had an experience that you're willing to share. We've all got experiences, and that's why we're in there.
And they save those comments to hurl at me.
That's
and
right.
Matt. So you guys are y'all are safe.
They come at us, and we're good. We
get those comments all the time. We're used to it.
Don't forget to go check out our website, which is graveyardpodcast.com. And there you can find links to purchase Graveyard Tales merchandise. Remember, holidays coming up. It's a good time.
Mm-hmm.
Get that graveyard member that's on your gift list, you know, a cool new t-shirt or a poster or something like that. I got some behind me. But you can also listen to the show and become a patron. And that's another thing I always like to mention at the holidays. If you've got a graveyard member, you know, on your gift list, man, a Patreon membership is great. It gives them tons of bonus content. You know, for the $10 a month, guys, they get the show Side Quest, which is just, if you want to hear Adam and I be as ridiculous as we can be, that's the show for you, I assure you.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we appreciate everybody who has donated to the show. It really keeps us going.
It does.
So until next time, we'll save you a seat in the graveyard.
See you soon.